The Injured Senior Podcast is here to help. Like it or not, the senior and elderly population is vulnerable to negligence committed by medical professionals, nursing homes, assisted living facilities, pharmaceutical and medical device companies, insurance companies, and everyday individuals and businesses. Your host, Steve Heisler, creator of the National Injured Senior Law Center, has been advocating for seniors' rights for over 30 years and is bringing you answers to your questions. This is the Injured Senior Podcast.
Hello, injured senior, elderly, and aging population. This is Steve Heisler, founder and CEO of the National Injured Senior Law Center, and you are about to experience the latest episode of the Injured Senior Podcast. The Injured Senior Podcast is a podcast that discusses medical and legal issues of vital importance to the aging population, senior and elderly communities, and to their children, loved ones, and caregivers. Now, to get a copy of our special report, The Top Danger to Seniors in the Hospital, just go to our new website, InjuredSeniorPodcast.com, and download your free copy. So, I'm sure everyone in our injured senior community knows somebody who has diabetes. Here's a sobering statistic, my friends. 34.2 million Americans, a little more than 1 in 10, are diabetic. Here's some more bad news. 88 million in the United States have pre-diabetes. Now, that's 1 in 3. Now, according to the American Diabetes Association, 26.8% of Americans who are seniors have either been diagnosed with diabetes or remain undiagnosed. Now, that's 1 in 4 seniors. Folks, we have a problem on our hands. So the CDC says that diabetes is a condition in which the body does not properly process food for use as energy. Most of the food we consume is turned into glucose or sugar for our bodies to use for energy. The pancreas, an organ that is close to the stomach, produces a hormone called insulin to help glucose get into the cells of our bodies. When you have diabetes, your body either does not make enough insulin or can't use its own insulin as best as it should. And this results in sugars building up in the blood. Now, one of the top health complications of diabetes are wounds, which can lead, in serious situations, can lead to lower limb amputations. Here to talk to us today about diabetes and wounds is Martha Kelso. Now, you probably remember Martha Kelso because she has been a frequent guest on our show. So Martha is the founder and CEO of Wound Care Plus LLC, the largest mobile care provider in the Midwest. Martha is widely recognized as being a pioneer in the advanced wound care arena who works strenuously to help shape the future landscape of healthcare. So, hello, Martha. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back, Steve. It's always fun joining you on your podcast.
Well, I have to thank you because we were talking off air and you're telling me that you've made a whirlwind tour around the state of Kansas or the state of Missouri.
That's correct.
And you literally are, you're driving on fumes right now, right?
Yep. We're rolling out some new services to help prevent wounds from deteriorating that are kind of groundbreaking and will help the seniors quite a bit. And it's something that Medicare just announced new coverage for. I had petitioned them back in August and said, this is something that the seniors need and I want Medicare to cover it. And Medicare agreed. So we're rolling out new services.
I can't believe that Medicare actually agreed with you, with you know, the senior community on something. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to talk about that on a future episode. You're already in the Injured Senior Podcast Hall of Fame. You're going to be one of our top Hall of Famers. All kidding aside, Martha, Diabetes is the seventh leading killer in the United States. Why is diabetes such a killer?
So the first thing I would say is diabetes often goes under-recognized, and people can live with diabetes and have little to no symptoms or symptoms that we easily brush off as something else. So when I was in nursing school, the mnemonic or the phrase that we were supposed to think about when it came to diabetes was the three P's, like P for Paul. And so they would say polyuria, polydipsia, polyphagia. I'm sorry, it was the three P's, not the four. So the three P's. So the three P's stand for polyphagia, which means excessive hunger, polydipsia, excessive thirst, and polyuria, excessive urination. So if any one of those three things is true, that's a huge symptom or red flag that you may have undiagnosed diabetes. But we tend to ignore, say, gosh, I was hot or I'm dehydrated. And, you know, so we brush it off and we don't get to the doctor. And oftentimes we realize we have diabetes when our vision fails and now we're blind. Our kidneys fail and now we're on dialysis. And so it can be a silent killer.
Yeah, that's that is definitely something which everybody needs to be on the lookout for, and everyone's in their day-to-day routine, and you know, we just need to stop and kind of take measurement of some symptoms that we're having and have it checked out. Mm-hmm. Now, you're a wound care specialist. How does diabetes affect wounds?
I might tie CMS or the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services right back into this answer. And they issued a memorandum 20 years ago, meaning Medicare's had their finger on this pulse for at least two decades, if not longer. And in their memorandum to Medicare insureds, they notified us, and I'm going to give a direct quote, that the amputation risk with those that have diabetes is 15 to 40 times greater than those without diabetes. And that diabetic 20 years ago, the diabetic population comprised only 5% of the general population, but more than 50% of all non-traumatic lower extremity amputations were on diabetic limbs.
And what is it about diabetes that causes that to, have such a high amputation rate?
Great question. It does some really devastating things to our body. And so unmanaged diabetes negatively impacts the microvascular blood flow. And so we're talking about the tiny veins or tiny arteries, the capillaries that feed our tissue. That is, when you have diabetes or uncontrolled diabetes, that gets damaged, which means it leaves our tissue exposed to no blood flow, no oxygen, no nutrients. And then we know one of the major side effects of diabetes is atherosclerosis. Atherosclerosis essentially means hardening of the arteries. And so it negatively impacts also the large blood flow vessels in our body as well. So it's that kind of double whammy. And it doesn't just impact our lower extremity. It impacts us head to toe. So if you looked at research studies, people that have diabetes end up with strokes and heart attacks or other major issues. But our lower extremity, of course, is what's furthest away from our heart. The further away you go from the harder it is for blood to get there, even if you're healthy. Now imagine not being healthy because of diabetes.
Okay. So then would you say that the number one type of wound that is affected by diabetes would be the lower limbs or the feet?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And even toes and lower extremities. Absolutely. And I will say too, some people say, but I'm diabetic and I've managed my blood sugars perfectly as long as I've known that I've had it. Managing blood sugars is amazing because it helps ward off some of these issues and keeps your blood flow better longer, but it still doesn't protect you from the long-term devastating effects of diabetes. So even people with well-managed blood sugars can still end up with a diabetic foot ulcer, still end up with amputation because it still damages the microvascular blood flow and the macrovascular blood flow.
Martha, you're an advocate of glycemic control, correct?
Correct, absolutely.
Okay, so first off, what is glycemic control for those in our audience who don't know?
Glycemic control is ensuring that the foods that we eat, carbohydrates and sugars, are able to be processed appropriately by our body and utilized as fuel for our cells. So managing blood sugars, diabetes, insulin levels is imperative so our cells can be healthy and our cells can use that glucose or sugar as energy for our body. When we don't manage glycemic control and our blood sugars become elevated, our body feels like it's starving. Our cells feel like they're starving because we're not getting sugars into the cells, or there's too much sugar in our bloodstream, too much glucose in our bloodstream for our body to manage. And so our body goes into a state of, my God, I'm thirsty. My God, I'm hungry. Feed me, hydrate me. When you may already have enough nutrition in your body, we just can't get access to it with our cells.
Yeah, practicing good glycemic control, what would our listeners be doing differently than what they might be doing now, say if they're on, say if they're diabetic?
If you're diabetic and you're on diabetic medications, following the diet prescribed by your doctor, and even if you've been in touch with a registered dietitian, learning how to count carbs and how to count grams of sugar based on your level of exercise and the medications that you're currently on. So it helps us keep from gaining weight. It helps maintain our appropriate weight for our body, but it also keeps our cells happy so it doesn't feel like it's starving. That in and of itself helps prevent ongoing damage from diabetes or more damage from diabetes.
Are there certain foods that that our injured senior community should be staying away from and some that they should be consuming more?
Generally speaking, simple sugars are things that we want to steer clear of. So things like, pop or donuts laced with glaze, Debbie cakes.
Right.
Thing. You have a lot of simple sugars that elevate or spike your blood sugars very quickly into a very high range. And sometimes the more devastating thing then, when we don't have protein or carbohydrates to level that out, your blood sugars can swing the other way and dip down very dangerously. And you hear about diabetic comas. Sometimes that's what happens. Our blood sugars go really high. We didn't give them anything to stabilize the blood sugars like protein. And then the blood sugars swing the other way and can drop dangerously low. And those ongoing swings of levels of sugar in your bloodstream is actually more dangerous than having a chronically, elevated glycemic index as well.
Right. So is there any resources you can point to that could help someone control their glycemia or, get it definitely manageable, make it more manageable?
I would request to see a nutritionist or registered dietitian. Most insurance payers provide that for new diabetics. The American Diabetes Association has a lot of great resources. And most local hospitals also have a nutrition class or a support group or some form of outreach and education, because we know that the number of diabetics and diabetic foot ulcers is a major drain on our insurance and healthcare dollars. We don't want people to end up with amputations. Somebody that has an amputation, the average life expectancy is 5 years after that amputation. And that's devastating. So, yeah.
No, thank you for that information. And you said that like a nutritionist or taking a nutrition class, is that covered by insurance?
Most insurances cover it or have a plan where you can go once or twice to see that registered dietitian or nutritionist once you have that diagnosis added. I would even wage to say that some plans may even cover an annual visit or even a consultation by phone with those experts.
Right. And right during COVID, I guess like a telemedicine appointment. Mm-hmm. That would include Medicare?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Medicare also pays for diabetic shoes once a year with 3 inserts. They have to be properly fitted by somebody that's trained to fit diabetic shoes. And they do have to have some form of neuropathy. Neuropathy means that it's numb or it doesn't have the normal sensation that we were born with. If that's true and a diabetic is neuropathic, they have sensation challenges in their foot, they're at a huge increased risk of developing a diabetic foot ulcer because they can't tell that shoes are rubbing differently or maybe that they've stepped on something.
Yeah, and if you, if anyone in our listenership has a diabetic foot ulcer, we actually dedicated an episode, a prior episode with Martha on diabetic foot ulcers. So I would recommend that you go back and listen to that because there's some really, really good information on that episode. Martha, does increasing age drive up the risk of diabetes?
Increasing age can drive up the risk of diabetes if you've had poor, you know, exercise, poor nutrition throughout your lifespan. And so the more years you combine poor habits, the greater the likelihood that you will develop diabetes.
Okay. Does insulin resistance increase as you get older?
It can if you've, you know, put a lot of stress on the islet cells of the pancreas by not eating the right things. Lots of carbs is damaging or makes the islet cells of our pancreas work harder to excrete insulin. And so the more that we abuse our bodies, the greater and the longer that we abuse our bodies, the greater the risk of developing diabetes.
So a lot of people don't think they're abusing their bodies. So if they eat a lot of cake or, you know, donuts or soda pop, as they say in Kansas. Are there any other products that should definitely be on the, should be eliminated or they should stay away from?
Sedentary lifestyle. If you don't, you know, at least have some exercise or, you know, activity regimen built into your day, the body doesn't need all the carbs or all the sugar that we're putting in it because you're not burning it or you're not using it. So if you know you're a truck driver, someone that stands behind a cashier all day, you know, people that don't have a lot of opportunity to get up and move throughout the day, those are people that we know have an elevated risk if we continue to, you know, overeat carbohydrates, overeat simple sugars, overeat complex sugars that the body eventually breaks down, you know, in time to sugar that our body needs to utilize, but maybe we don't need it because we're not very active.
So I know your company, Wound Care Plus, does a lot of work in nursing homes and long-term care facilities. And would you say that the average person in a long-term care facility is living a sedentary lifestyle?
Yes, absolutely. And the other challenge that we see, you know, diabetic wounds are never just diabetic wounds. They're diabetic wounds with atherosclerosis. They're diabetic wounds with neuropathy, or they're neuroischemic, meaning they can't feel and they have poor blood flow going to that limb. And then because they're sedentary, they also may have a pressure component. And so the more etiologies, the more components we add into that wound, the higher the risk of amputation, the higher the risk that we're not going to get it to heal.
Right. Yeah, that's not good. And so a good nursing home or good assisted living is going to make sure that their residents or patients are out and about and moving around as much as possible. And I guess with COVID right now, where everyone is kind of locked up in their own room, it kind of defeats the purpose, right? Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I would say, one of our company standards, if they have a wound on the lower extremity, one of the first things that we want to see is some kind of vascular study. And the reason why is it tells us what we're dealing with. Do they have an undiagnosed blockage? If so, we need to get them out to vascular and see if we can alleviate that blockage. If they don't have a blockage, but they have moderate to severe arterial disease, then that's a conversation we need to be having with the patient, the resident, the family, because we can't fix their underlying blood flow issues always, which means we need to be more diligent. We need to educate that they will most likely develop more wounds. Does the family prefer amputation or do they prefer hospice? If we get to the state that these can't be healed, they're causing pain, you know, it might be draining a lot. We know that they're going to develop more wounds. It changes the care plan, the goal, the outcome, and the trajectory of the wound.
Yeah, neither option is good. Mm-hmm. So it just can't stress enough that our listeners need to be vigilant about proper glycemic control. Mm-hmm. I was reading something which said that poor glycemic control is associated with worsening cognitive functions in seniors. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that or you know anything about that?
And it goes back, in my opinion, not being a neurologist, but it goes back to blood flow. And so you think about in the old days, people would say, well, you know, grandma's confused because she has hardening of the arteries. And they were talking about the arteries in your neck that fuel, you know, the brain. And when those arteries become hardened, the blood flow doesn't get to where we need it to go. And so they would call it hardening of the arteries or confusion due to hardening of the arteries. And what the issue is because of that atherosclerosis or arterial disease, our brain isn't getting as much blood flow as it needs to, or maybe not at the pressures that it needs to. And so it can cause cognitive impairment. Yep.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think the final determination is that it affects everything. I mean, yeah, it might be really, really hitting the lower limbs, but really, if you're diabetic, it's going to have a whole body negative effect. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in our younger population, and I see this often, there's a really fancy name, $6 word for it, but it's called acanthosis nigricans.
And say that 10 times.
I know. you'll see what looks like a dirty neck. And so you go, gosh, does that person not wash their neck? They literally look like they have dirt on their neck that they haven't washed off in weeks.
Right.
So, you know, all the mothers out there, we want to get soap on a washcloth and scrub it, but it doesn't scrub off. That dirty neck syndrome is a symptom of diabetes in our younger population. Mm. And so if we can teach people to kind of look for some of those things and get them into the doctor, that acanthosis nigricans will disappear, but even better, they won't be blind or be in renal failure because we're getting them diagnosed soon enough.
And thanks for that. That's good information. And our senior population might want to have a conversation with their grandchildren or their children and say, hey, this is something you need to look out for. Mm-hmm. You talked about exercise. Again, a lot of seniors are sedentary. Would you have any ideas that what type of exercise or how much exercise would be, you know, proper to be able to stave off, you know, diabetes?
Mm-hmm. Everybody's nutritional demands are different, and especially based on your medications that you're currently on and your comorbid medical conditions. But I will say in most nursing homes, they have an activity program with an activity director. And so traditionally, most of those activities can be chair exercises. And so I would say encouraging your loved ones outside of COVID to get out and participate in those activity programs so they are getting some level of monitored exercise every day or several times a day when possible.
And if they're able to ambulate and they're able to move around, is walking good enough or is that enough exercise?
Walking's amazing because any weight-bearing exercise also wards off osteoporosis. And so some buildings or communities have a walk to dine program where a restorative nurse aide or regular nurse aide helps ambulate or walk them to dinner and back. And so even that little bit of exercise back and forth is better than no exercise. And it greatly reduces their chance of developing diabetes. I will say something else that we've noticed in the numerous years that we've been open, but there's times where we come in, we see a wound on the lower extremity, and then we say, are they diabetic? And we're told no. And then we say, okay, when was their last hemoglobin A1C, which is a blood draw? And we haven't done a hemoglobin A1C because they're not diabetic. So we order a hemoglobin A1C and come to find out they're an undiagnosed diabetic. And I would say that that happens probably about 5% of the time with the lower extremity wounds that we see. And so if I had a kind of a word to the wise to all the medical directors, primary care doctors, nursing homes out there, consider ordering a hemoglobin A1C at least annually so that we're not having these undiagnosed diabetics kind of slide under the radar. And then I would also say, keep in mind that even pre-diabetes still acts like diabetes in a wound care world. So if they're pre-diabetic, it's still going to harm the arteries and create atherosclerosis. It will still harm the microvascular blood flow. And so if they're pre-diabetic, we need to be treating them as if they're diabetic.
Right. And the hemoglobin A1C, 5.7 to 6.1 would be pre-diabetic, right? And anything that's over correct. 6.1, you're diabetic.
And the American Diabetes Association, I believe, has the criteria. I don't have it memorized, but the hemoglobin A1C, of course, can be used to diagnose diabetes. And then I think it's 2 or 3 fasting glucose levels that are elevated also. And I'm not quoting because I don't have it memorized, but you can also look at the glucose level in the body. If it's drawn on a fasting blood sugar and it's elevated a certain number of times, that can also be used to diagnose pre-diabetes or diabetes.
Got it. Martha, again, you delivered the goods. I tell you, you always bring us so much valuable information and details. Thanks for discussing that much needed information with us. Now, you have two, I believe, publications or articles that you wrote, or can you tell our injured senior community a little bit about that?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Thank you. On our website, it's www.mywoundcareplus.com, all spelled out. There's two reference guides. The first one is called What is a Diabetic Foot Ulcer? And this is just a very quick, high-level view of what a diabetic foot ulcer is. We discuss what the Cleveland Clinic says about diabetic foot ulcers. There's information in there from CMS. It's just the glossy overview. And it's about a 3-page document. The other one, though, is called Diabetic Foot Ulcers, A Quick Guide to Prevention, Assessment, and Management. That one is a 15-page document that discusses the importance of diabetic foot ulcers and then talks about the neuropathic ulcer, neuroischemic or ischemic ulcer. And then I even published a mnemonic to help patients know what they need to be doing throughout the year if they have diabetes to help prevent getting a diabetic wound. And that mnemonic is called Diabetic Limb. And of course, each letter stands for something that you should be doing to help prevent diabetic wounds.
And they can access that on the website.
Correct. It's in the online library portal. So Diabetic Foot Ulcer, A Quick Guide to Prevention, Management, etc. And then What is a Diabetic Ulcer?
That's great. Okay. Everybody needs to go to that, especially if you have a diabetic foot ulcer, but also to get some really good stuff on how to prevent getting diabetic foot ulcers and I guess diabetes in general. How can our listeners find you on social media, Martha?
Sure. We're on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. And it's usually Wound Care Plus or My Wound Care Plus with hashtags or ampersand at symbols. And then our office number, if anybody has questions or needs to find resources, is 888-256-3814. And we're active in 14 states, so it's kind of hard not to find us in your neck of the woods.
Coming to a state near you.
That's right.
Great, yeah. Great. Thanks again, Martha, and all the best in 2021, my good friend.
You as well. Thank you, Steve.
You got it. Injured senior and aging population community, thanks for listening to today's episode. I want to again thank Martha Kelso for appearing on the show today. If you love the Injured Senior Podcast, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and review. You can go on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform to do that. If you want to share your story on an upcoming show or have any suggestions or comments that you would like me to address on this show, you could either email me at steve@injuredseniorhotline.com. As you know, I answer all emails. But we just added a new shiny button on our injuredseniorpodcast.com website. You can actually leave a message. You'll see something on the homepage where you can actually leave us a message, kind of like a voicemail, and we will answer that on the show if you'd like. So until next time, I'm looking forward to next week's experience on the Injured Senior Podcast. Stay safe, and I will talk to you soon. Goodbye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Injured Senior Podcast. If you enjoyed the podcast, please rate, subscribe, review, and share on Apple, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. Connect with us at InjuredSeniorPodcast.com and sign up for our newsletter. To find out more or to get help at any time, visit InjuredSeniorPodcast.com or call 855-622-6530. That's 855-622-6530.